This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase.
You're listening to South Dakota Unlimited, the podcast for the average South Dakota sportsman, where we talk everything outdoors, hunting, fishing, trapping, conservation, and anything else that impacts you as a sportsman in the 605. Hosted by CJ Peters. Now let's get started.
Hello everyone and welcome back to South Dakota Unlimited. Today, the day that this episode is released, is Deer Season Eve. That's right, everything we've been preparing for is finally here. With that being said, a little bittersweet moment for me, I am actually missing deer opener this year. But on a positive note, as you listen to this, I am out west chasing elk with an over-the-counter tag with my bow. So it sucks I'm missing the opener, but I guess this kind of makes up for it. So hopefully I get something, but otherwise it'll be a good learning opportunity. So good luck to everyone that is chasing deer here at home on opener, and send me some of your success pictures as they start going down. On today's episode, I bring on Mr. Nate Thomas from the Missouri Woods and Water podcast that is also part of the Sportsman's Nation. We cover his plans for the upcoming season, some newer gear he's trying out, and what he's most excited about for this upcoming season, and some BS in between. It's a great episode. I think you'll really enjoy it. So let's go ahead and let's get right on to it. Hey man, how's it going?
Good. What's going on with you?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just getting ready for the upcoming season and can't wait. I'm sure you're about doing the same.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit before we recorded. I feel like my life is just a giant mess right now. I've got all my gear is laying in my office just loosely. I don't have a truck currently. And we leave in 3 days. So
yep.
I'm probably freaking out for no reason, but I feel like usually this is my fifth year going. I feel like usually I'm already totally completely packed and ready to go by now, but I'm just I'll get it done.
Feels like behind the eight ball. I just feel like no matter when you start preparing, no matter what, it's like a last minute rush. Like I started getting stuff together for this hunt in I think March or April, and now I'm just like crap. I have 2 days to leave, but
yeah. And I should be better at this by now. This is my fifth year. This is your first. So, you know, like,
yeah,
that's why I shouldn't panic because I know where all my shit is. It's just not ready. So maybe that's why I'm just kind of I'm procrastinating a little bit. Who knows? I'll be okay. Hopefully.
Yeah. You'll get it all ready. But yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and start out. Tell everybody who you are, where you're from, what you do.
All right. So my name is Nate Thomas and I'm from Missouri. I'm the host of the Missouri Woods and Water podcast, which is part of the Sportsman's Nation network that you and I are part of, or our two podcasts are a part of. And born and raised in Missouri, started hunting here and, you know, really only experienced Western hunting in one state at this point. I've been doing it for 5 years, but you know, Western hunting wise, if we get into elk at all, that's what I've done so far. So, I guess you can call me a flatlander, although Missouri is not flat, but people can think it.
Absolutely. So what do you do for work?
I am a, loss control and safety, consultant technically. So I kind of drive around and tell people to be smart and don't do dangerous things in a nutshell. So,
you're like OSHA.
Not really, but sort of. Yeah.
Sort of.
Like I feel like my actual full-time job is a common sense job. Like you walk in and go, hey, Did you ever think about not tripping over stuff and, you know, like pay attention to where you're walking? Oh, I never thought of that. Like, that's kind of my job.
The common sense police, and God knows we're lacking on that these days.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, the stuff I see in my career, I think I'm in for a secure job until I retire, because the stuff I see, I'm just like, what in the hell were you doing?
Yep. I can relate to that, you know, being an ER nurse. So yeah, did you ever think about turning the lawnmower off before you tried to clean it?
Nope. Never crossed my mind.
Yeah. I had that happen a couple of times. Good God.
And I can understand I've been doing this for like 9 years now. I was actually a full-time firefighter in Kansas City before that. And so, you know, the whole medical side, we ran the medical calls and all that. And yeah, you would see some odd stuff. That's for sure.
Yep. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. And my wife's a nurse, so she tells me stories. So yeah, I definitely understand your struggles.
I mean, at some point, natural selection failed us. It's probably when medical care got better, but
yeah,
that's a whole different
topic. You're doing a good job of keeping the dumb ones alive. But I guess that's a good thing.
I mean, it's job security, but
it is.
Anyway. So how, did you get into the hunting the traditional way? Like born into a hunting family, or you kind of start late, or kind of learn yourself? How'd that go?
No, and that's what's kind of cool about our show. Not to go back to our show, but the three of us all have vastly different experiences with how we got into the outdoors. So I didn't grow up hunting. I didn't know anybody that did. None of my family did. I grew up camping and fishing. My dad loved fishing, still does. And so we would go camping at all these state parks in Missouri and other places. And we would go fly fishing and, you know, regular fishing and whatever. But hunting wasn't even something I even thought about until I was in high school. And then I started dating my now wife. And she grew up on a farm, and her brothers hunted. And her oldest brother took me turkey hunting when I was a teenager. And, that started the problem, and then it graduated into deer, and now I'm sitting here going out west chasing elk. So I didn't start hunting whitetail. I don't know exactly what my age was, but I would say I was around 20 when I started hunting.
Yep. Was that with a gun or was that with a bow?
Yeah, traditionally, especially from Missouri, the first time I went deer hunting was with a rifle. That lasted maybe 2 years, and then I quickly was like, this is fun and all, but what's that pointy thing, that stick with a pointy thing on the end of it? I like that, looks cool. And got into that. So yeah,
that's awesome. So how long did it take you to be, I guess, what you would consider successful in that?
I don't think I'm successful yet. You know, I mean, like, oh man, I'll tell you, not to give him these people a big head. I'm just messing around, but when I first started bow hunting, I bet I went, I'll just say 5 years for argument's sake, because I don't remember, but I bet I went 5 years and I don't think I saw more than like five deer that entire time. Like, I just went hunting. I didn't care what the wind was. I just went because that's what I did. Right. And I didn't really have anybody to like ask questions to, or maybe I just didn't ask. So I just was doing it. And I never saw deer. And then I started listening to podcasts, actually Wired to Hunt, mm-hmm. and then Nine Finger Chronicles, which is Dan and then Mark Kenyon. At the time, Dan was Mark's co-host on Wired to Hunt. So I started listening to them, and they would talk about wind and your scent and all these different things. And then I would start asking my brother-in-law, hey, how do you do this? And he would, you know, teach me a little bit about it. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to start paying attention to my wind. And it was almost like a light bulb went off. All of a sudden I would go hunting and I would see like five does that night, or, you know, I'd see a buck walk through and I'm just like, wow, I'm the best hunter that ever lived. but you know, really it was several years of me beating my head against the wall. Not really. I mean, I was still having fun, but it was like, how come I can't see deer? How come, you know, all these all guys are, but I don't. And it was really when I started asking questions to myself as to why I wasn't killing stuff. Then I started learning, and I'll be honest with you, to this day, I'm still learning. I don't think I'll ever stop learning, especially getting started later. I'll never master it. And if I ever do, I would guess you'd get bored of it, wouldn't you?
I mean, I would think so.
Yeah. So I hope I never master it.
Well, I think it's one of those things. It's just like, I guess anything in life, the moment you stop learning, you're dead. I mean, if you think you're that good that you stop learning, you're probably not going to be that good, because exactly, yeah. There's always more to learn, no matter what it is.
Yeah. There's always people that are better than you are. And so
absolutely.
If you can't learn something from somebody, then you're either too cocky to get better, or you're probably about done with whatever it is you're doing at that point.
Yeah. So, you need to take a good long look in the mirror.
Yeah, right. And I don't like looking at myself in the mirror. So,
and to eat some humble pie, because that'll do it to you.
Yep.
But so when did you shoot your first buck, just out of curiosity, or your first deer even with a bow?
My first deer was with a rifle. Mm-hmm. Like I told you, I started rifle hunting. My first deer with a bow. Oh man, my memory is about as garbage as you could think here. I'm looking at him. He's right there. Gosh, I would say 13 years ago, somewhere in there, maybe, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you really think about it, let's say 10 years ago, just for argument's sake, I've only been killing deer with a bow for a decade, and it's not like I do it every year. I haven't tagged out every year. So, you know, there's a lot of learning left to do, which is why I love doing the podcast and listening to what I feel like is an inordinate number of podcasts, right? Mm-hmm. I listen to all kinds of stuff now, because you can just learn so much just by listening to people bullshit more than, I mean, you know, I love topics, but sometimes you just sit down and listen to people talk and you can learn what some things you can try to do are too. So yeah, I'll never stop learning. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's just like, well, the working class bow hunter guys, they do it well. I mean, they just bolt, like they just BS the entire time, but I've learned so much from their podcast, just listening to it.
They're one of my favorite ones. They weren't one of my first ones, but they're definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. And now it's just, if you're not learning this day and age from some sort of media, whether it's YouTube or podcasts, like you're going to be behind the eight ball, because there is so much content out there that is just absolutely phenomenal and loaded with things to learn.
I remember listening to a show one time that when Dan was telling about his upbringing and hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he was a kid, podcasts weren't a thing. And he was telling a story out, like, and I might be getting this a little bit wrong, but he went bow hunting. He would take a 5-gallon bucket. He would cross this fence and go sit in this tree line and sit on the bucket. Like that was, and he's like, if podcasts were a thing, my learning curve would have been so much shorter, because I could have sat there and absorbed things. You know, I just went out and I went on my own. Nobody really bow hunted with him, I guess, at the time. And he just like did it. And I was kind of the same way. Just, I was older, because I had people I could have asked, but it was like, I didn't want to bother them. So I just went and tried to do it myself. And then I started listening to those things. And then I started asking questions. And it was just like, hell, I see deer all the time. Hunting's a lot more fun when you see deer or whatever animal you're going after, even if you don't kill one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot more successful in that aspect because you see stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, okay, you know, you're seeing deer. Like, okay, now I'm actually kind of doing stuff right. Or did you sit in the stand all night and you're like, son of a bitch.
That was boring.
Damn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still nice to get out there, but same time you're like, okay, what am I doing wrong? But
yeah.
But then I guess you can get to that next level. Like I've heard Mark Kenyon and Dan talk about it, and numerous other guys were like, you might not see a deer all night, Dan Enfold especially. You might not see a deer all night, but when you do see it, it's gonna be the bucket you're after. I'm like, God, I don't even know how to get to that level. I guess that it's just like 20 years of experience.
Yeah. And that's like, I listen to guys like Dan Enfold and Mark and all them guys that, you know, or really anybody that, I have a horrible time trying to explain this, but you know, and I know dozens of guys and girls that are just straight up killers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know how to hunt. They might not be in the industry and big names and anything like that, but they know how to hunt. They know what the hell they're doing. And I look at them and go, I wish I had a tenth of, you know, my pinky fingernail of the skill level that you do.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, they don't even have to think. It's like they show up to the woods and they're going to go, I'm going to go sit on this ridge because he's going to be crossing. This is what's going to happen. And then it happens. And then I'm just like, well, how the hell did you do that? I just don't have that in me. And, or maybe I do, and I'm just being hard on myself, but yeah, you're right. It's one of those things where I have made good choices before, but more often than not, I'm second guessing everything I did.
Yeah. And I don't know if that just comes with time or what, or, you know, like some guys, like you're talking about, they're just straight killers. Like, I don't know if it's their instinct or what, they just have it right and they've got it down. But
I firmly believe that it's, hunting can be just like football or basketball. Some people are just naturally gifted. Some aren't.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know where I lie yet. I don't know where I lie yet. Hopefully I have a little natural talent, but there are some people that I'm just like, if I could follow around you all day, I'll find something because you're going to find it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. Have you heard of the guys from Buckstorm? Buckstorm. Yeah. So I actually just on Sunday, I went antelope hunting with Travis, and just like to follow that guy around. Like I did not grow up in a hunting family, you know,
right.
Did not anything, like just to like watch what he does. She's like, what, how did you know to do that? Like, what the hell? Yep.
Like, I get it, man.
Good at it.
And then you add in, we're just talking about whitetail. Then you add in all the different species you can hunt, and then you're like, oh, I got to learn how to do it with this species. And oh, what if I want to go hunt whitetail in South Dakota? I don't know if there's whitetail up there, to be honest.
Oh, with yeah, you. There is.
Okay, thank you. What if I want to go? I'm sure they're hunted differently than you're going to hunt them in Missouri, or even different spots of Missouri are hunted differently. So. Yeah. You're only mastering, like, even if you feel like you're getting good, you're only maybe mastering your little county that you're hunting mm-hmm. until you branch out and you're like, oh shit, this is different. I gotta learn again.
Right. Like agland completely. Like I grew up in Southern Iowa and I kick myself to this day for not learning how to deer hunt when I was in Southern Iowa.
But you were in like the Mecca of deer.
I was in the Mecca and I learned how to fucking duck hunt of all things. I learned how to duck hunt in Southern Iowa. God damn it.
You made some poor life choices, man.
Yeah. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to be a lot more beers deep if we start doing that. But anyway, and it just hunting from then, well, you know, eastern half of South Dakota is a lot like the Midwest, like East River mm-hmm. until you start hitting the Missouri River breaks. Then you get the West River, and it's kind of similar to Kansas, that open prairie, and it's just completely yeah. different. And just trying to find, you know, right now I'm living in the Black Hills for the fall, and even that's its own animal. And like, so you get the hill country, or you can get the mountain bucks, or the agland bucks, or the prairie bucks, and it's just like, you can, if you can master all those, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like, if you can master those, all those, then you're a god in and of itself.
It's never going to be me, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, same here, but I'll at least enjoy trying.
You know, and like I said, I'm not even close to being what I think is a great hunter. And instead of focusing just on whitetail, I've gotten so ate up with archery hunting and hunting. Now we go out to Colorado right now every year and chase them over the counter early season like idiots. And it's amazing the difference, you know, from your first year to your fifth year, how much you really have learned mm-hmm. While still being bone dry on the tag filling thing. Like I have not killed an elk yet, but man, I feel so much more confident than I did the first couple of years that if I can get in one this year or whatever, I feel like I can make it happen. You know, it's you do feel like you do learn, but there's still like, I'm still such a green elk hunter. I'm sure. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg, I would think, especially when you've only got 10 to 14 days a year to go hunt them. That's it. That's my only chance.
Yeah. It's not like you're a resident. Excuse me. Gets to spend like, you know, they can be out there in the winter. They can be out there in the spring, looking at them summer. And they can just
scouting. I don't get to do that.
And it's just like you with whitetail in the summer. Or wherever you're at throughout the year. But anyway, so I guess let's get into the main topic. Tell us about your season. Obviously, you got an elk hunt coming up in Colorado. Yep. Over the counter.
That's how it start. It's going to kick off with elk. We actually leave, and like I said, 3 days earlier to go hunt OTC archery elk. We've had a rough couple years with it. OTC units in Colorado, and I think in every state that's got OTC units, have really gotten busy. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in any bad way. It's everybody's right to go check that out. But it's also made the hunting really difficult. And, you know, my first few years, it was really good. So we got lazy with buying points or putting in points for other states, you know, that sort of stuff. And so now we're kind of in that little zone where we don't have enough points to draw anything anywhere else or even in Colorado. So we have to, you know, go back to that OTC type of stuff. And, anyways, so we leave in 3 days for that. Always excited. There's always that, like, hunting season officially begins for us when we drive away. And there's always that, like, almost like Christmas Eve when you were a kid, like excitement. You know, Christmas is here. And, you know, whether we see elk or not, it's always a great time. You know, it's, you're never going to experience that sitting on your couch, and we love it. It's some of the best times I've ever had in my life, going out there and, you know, chasing them around, chasing what I call the timber ghost around. Cause it's just like, I've never seen an 800-pound animal be so quiet at times, in a bunch of deadfall that I have to jump over, you know, or whatever. And so, yeah, we start there. And then we'll come back to Missouri. Missouri's archery season starts September 15th. I probably will not be hunting that early. It really depends on a few things, but my main property that I hunt usually goes pretty quiet when the whitetail go hardhorned. Mm. Right after they go hardhorned. Dan Johnson kind of talks about that shift. Yeah. And I really do see it in that property. Like, I'll have bucks all summer long, and then they go hardhorned and they're just like gone. And I'm okay with that because I almost always see them again starting around mid-October. So what I do, because I am lucky enough to hunt a piece of private ground in Missouri, it's very small. It's only about 15 acres that I hunt right now. So mm-hmm. not like I'm hunting 4,000 acres of whatever the hell I want to, but, I use trail cameras to kind of help me decide, hey, are they starting to show back up here and there? What do we got going on? And then I'll couple that with the, weather, you know, if we have a huge weather change, a weather event, I call it, I'll use those, and then I'll start kind of being smart about when I start telling my wife, hey, I'm leaving. And I'm going to go hunt tonight or whatever. Because really, if I go sit in a tree stand from September 15th through, let's say, September 30th, the chances of me taking down one of my target bucks that I would like to potentially kill are almost zero. And all I'm doing is pissing my wife off the entire time. You know? So,
not making things better come November when you really need to be out there, or October.
Yeah, exactly. Or yeah. So, it's, you know, what I've got kids, I've got four children, I'm married, our kids are busy. I've got to be kind of a little bit smart about, would I like to be out in the woods every single night? Yes, because you never know what could happen. But in my life now, that is impossible. It will never happen for me. So I got to be a little smarter about, when are you going to go, dude? If you've got, let's say, between October 30th and September 15th, you know, the beginning of the season till, you know, the end of October, if you get 15 days to hunt in those 2 months, why are you going to waste them in the first 15 when the last 15 are probably the best ones?
Yep.
So yep. I'm just kind of, you know, and it's really hard because I get real antsy, man. I mean, I do. September 15th, last year was the first year that I haven't been in a tree stand on that day, because it's just like tradition. You go on opening day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And last year I didn't, because it was hot as balls outside and mosquitoes all over the place. And I'm like, I'm not going to see a deer that I want to kill most likely anyway. So I'm just going to stay home. And after the night was over, I was like, that was kind of nice, you know? So yeah, I'm getting a little better about trying to be patient and not burn up my spot. Like I said, it's only 15 acres or so. Mm-hmm. So hunting a small piece of property like that, you can burn it the hell up real quick if you don't watch it. So I got to be a little smarter about like when I go in, when I go out, that sort of stuff.
What do you have? Like what's the terrain on the property like? Is it ag land? Is it more timbered? How does it look?
About half and half. It's half and half. So the entire farm is 40 acres.
Mm-hmm.
I really only hunt the bottom half. If you were to take like a square, the north half of the square is ag, and then the south half of the square is timber. And then that timber has a pretty big elevation change from the start of it to the end of it. So there's a creek running through it, and then a pretty steep bank that goes up to the top half, which is real thick and pretty nasty, gnarly stuff. And so that is a good bedding area. And then I typically try to leave them alone and try to get them coming out of it. But you know, I've dove into the bedding before too. It just depends on what's going on that year. But so yeah, it's really just some ag that is pretty wide open. So it's not like you're going to go sit in the middle of the cornfield or a bean field. So I typically stick to that timber and try to get them coming in or out or doing whatever during the rut.
So you just nail like, you know, however far behind, like you find a trail coming out into the ag, and then you follow that back and kind of set up covering that trail back in the timber. Okay.
Yeah. And I've learned like, I've been hunting that place now for 4 or 5 years now. Can't remember. And so I'm learning every year. All right, these guys like to come down off. They like to walk the ridge of this creek, and then they'll drop off and they'll go this way. Now, in general, that's a pretty normal thing, but you got to remember, a mature buck, while they will travel that path of least resistance, sometimes they're six, you know, they're between 4 and 5, 6, 7 years old for a reason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of times they'll get off of it. So, yeah, it's just, and it depends on like when. If I'm in there September 25th, I'll probably be hunting a field edge most likely, and not diving into the staging area or even close to the bedding, just to see what's going on. And then as the year goes, I kind of start moving a little further in, but it's not very big. So it's not like I'm not moving a whole lot, because it's 15 acres. Right. So like the staging area doesn't really exist. So I got to be careful about like when I make my moves in there, because I mean, I could be just walking right in on top of their bed and not really realize it.
Yeah. So then is that like, so what does Missouri's tag situation look like for residents? Do you have one buck tag, maybe a doe tag, or how does that work?
So you can buy, I'm not sure about unlimited, but you can buy antlerless tags.
Okay.
You can buy an any deer tag, so any sex, antlers or a doe, and then you can buy antlerless as well. In Missouri, you can kill two bucks a year. You can kill one buck leading up to rifle season with an archery tag, and then you can kill a second buck utilizing that rifle tag. You have to buy a firearms tag during mm-hmm. that 10-day rifle season. And if you don't kill one during that rifle portion, you can kill a second buck the remaining archery season after that.
Oh, okay.
Doe-wise, I usually only buy one antlerless tag a year extra. So I'm not really sure how many you could actually buy, but I would be perfectly happy with a buck and a doe if I got them, or $2 or whatever. So I don't really need that much more meat. And honestly, two deer is quite a bit of meat for me. So, anyways, yeah, that's kind of the situation. You can end up with $2, but you can't just kill two right off the bat and be done.
Right. So when you're playing your little, cat and mouse game on a 15 acre property, and you have your archery tag at the beginning of the year, do you hunt that same property with rifle, or do you buy a rifle tag?
I have, but I have another farm that I hunt that is a large farm, about 200 acres, but literally, and I'm kind of joking when I say this, but there's like freaking 7 trees on the entire place. So like you're hunting a lot of ditches and trying to like do pinch points, and literally you'll sit in the ditch waiting, you know, that sort of stuff. So that farm is much more conducive to rifle hunting if I'm going to take the boomstick out. The smaller place that's got timber, I have hunted it with a rifle. But it's just, you can hunt the field there. There is an ag field. It's just going to be harder. So that open farm is a little easier to rifle hunt if that's what you're going to do.
Right. Yeah. When is the rifle season in Missouri?
It is usually around the second weekend of November. So in Missouri, it usually hits right around the peak of the rut. So a lot of good deer go down in that 10-day period. Yeah.
Yep.
And like last year, I've never, at least in my experience, I have never seen the rut hit so perfectly for rifle season last year. You can look at it two ways. Like some people hate that rifle season is in the middle of the rut because it kills a lot of bucks. And I understand that, you know, while Missouri is a terrific whitetail state, you know, that probably doesn't help it. But on the other hand, you put rifle season in the beginning of December, let's say, less people are able to harvest a good deer or a good buck, and you might have less interest in the sport as it goes. So, I mean, I can see both arguments for it. I don't love it, but I don't make the rules, so I'll do what I got.
That's fair. So you can always draw your rifle tag. That's like a given.
Yeah, over the counter. All you do is go buy it. Yeah, $17 or whatever it is.
Man, must be nice.
So you got to draw?
We have to draw it here. Yeah.
And it's there ain't no drawing here. You just buy them. Yeah.
Yeah. But so you have your elk hunt, your archery deer, and your rifle deer, and that's going to be your year.
And you got fall turkey.
Fall turkey.
You do have fall turkey. I don't really hunt fall turkey. I go hunt deer, and then if you get the turkey tags with your deer tags.
Oh, okay.
And so if a turkey were to walk in front of me, I guess it would eat an arrow if it was legal. So, but you do have fall turkey, and there are a lot of people that straight up hunt fall turkey. So, you know, that's legitimate, but, you got fall turkey. We'll go through deer season. And then, we've gotten pretty, I wouldn't say huge into it, but we have started really enjoying coyote hunting. And so usually like after deer season starts winding down, we're kind of moving into coyotes and trying to, you know, put some dogs on the ground.
When is that kind of switch? Like December-ish time frame, January?
Well, like Missouri's archery season goes through January 15th.
Oh, okay. To South Dakota.
We could hunt coyotes anytime. I think Missouri's coyote season, there is about a 2-week period sometime around when they're dropping pups, that you can't hunt them, but that's it. And so it's essentially a 365 season. We don't typically get going in them until January. You know, we have before, but it's, you know, it's just less normal for us until after the season's over. And then we have a lot of fun until spring hits, and, you know, and then we've even hunted them this summer some more, and it's fun. You got spring turkey in Missouri. That is pretty big. We're having some problems with our turkey population. So, things might be changing. Yeah, it really does. I don't think it's a Missouri problem. It's kind of everybody. But I would expect some changes in our tag numbers or something at some point because of that. So that's a but that's a huge thing in Missouri. Turkey season's, it's not as big as deer season, but it's pretty big.
Yeah, I don't know that it's huge in South Dakota, but there are people who do it. It's definitely bigger in Iowa, where I grew up. A lot of people turkey hunt more. But so out of
Go ahead. No, it's good.
I was just going to say, out of your seasons that are coming up here, what would you say the tag is that you're most excited for?
If I could write the script, there is a buck I would love to shoot with my bow.
Oh, and so you got target buck?
If I got nothing else, I would be happy.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, so yeah. It's your target buck for the year. Number one thing you want to kill.
I would say so. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Most important question. Did you name him?
I did.
All right.
I am a freaking huge fan of nicknaming deer. Okay.
Yep.
And if you ever listen to our show, Micah thinks it's stupid. So we always fight about it and it's fun. So I am a fan of nicknaming deer, and I'm also not real creative. So when I first started nicknaming deer, I thought, how the hell am I going to name these things? What am I going to say? Like that cool guy or whatever. So I grew up playing the video game Mortal Kombat and watching the movies and stuff. And I got badass names. So I started naming my deer after Mortal Kombat characters. So take it for what it's worth, man. This buck that I'm after, his nickname is Reptile.
Reptile?
Which is a Mortal Kombat character.
Okay. What is he just like a, describe him. Is he like a big, non-typical drop tine buck?
There's no drop tines. He's a really tall, basically a mainframe ape, but he's got quite a bit of garbage coming out. And I have no idea what he's going to score. He's a mature deer, and that's really all I give a shit about. But he's got it going for me. Like, he makes my heart pump when I see pictures of him, and I think I can kill him if I play it right. So he's real tall. Like, I don't even think he's past his ears, but he is just skyscraping just up. And he's just a cool deer. So
awesome.
I think he'll be a good deer as far as like the score goes, which I think is dumb anyway. You know, like if you love a deer, if a deer makes you excited and you want to use your tag on him, do it. And if someone else thinks that was dumb, well, I don't care what you think. That wasn't your tag. It was mine.
Yep, screw you.
You know, I wish there was a little more of that, but you know, like, just congratulate somebody instead of saying, well, I wouldn't have shot him. Well, I don't care. So yeah, well,
I did. And I'm happy about it. So
yeah. And like I said, he's a mature deer. So, and yeah, he's going to score awesome. Good too. But, so yeah, if you told me that I wouldn't kill him, but I would kill an elk this year, I would strongly consider that trade.
That's fair.
I really would.
Yeah. After 5 years of putting in the hard work.
Dude, and you could even tell me it was going to be a cow elk, and I might take that trade, because my first year elk hunting, I think I've told this story before, but my very first day elk hunting, my brother-in-law, he said, hey, I'm going to stay right here. You go around this ridge and sit there for a little while. So I did that, and I decided to start working my way back to him, because honestly, I started feeling a little uneasy. Back then I didn't have Onyx or anything. So all I had was that little yellow Garmin that didn't have any maps on. It was just a dot where I was, you know, and a dot where camp was. And so I started feeling a little lost in that deep, dark timber, you know? And, so I started trying to go find my brother-in-law. And as I'm walking, I look up and there's a bull elk maybe 60 yards away from me, walking kind of away from me. And when I saw him, I don't even think I remembered I had a bow in my hand. Like, it was just, oh my God, I can't believe I see this right now. There's an elk right there. And there, I, I didn't even bring my bow up. It was just like jaw on the floor, on the ground. And there was a lot of that my first year. Like seeing elk was just amazing to me.
Yeah.
Well, that was year one. Now year five, after I've had several opportunities to potentially kill one that I screwed up. I love seeing them still, but now I'm tired of seeing them. Now I want one to eat an arrow. So, you know, it's like, if you could tell me that you could guarantee me an elk this year and I wouldn't see that deer, I would probably take that deal. I really probably would. So
that's a fair deal.
Yeah, I'll take that deal. If you can guarantee it, I'll take that right now. You just guarantee me an elk and we'll call it good.
You know, I wish I could, but you know, I've got red hair. I have no soul. I'm the son of the devil. I'm not God. So it's not going to happen.
You know what? I've told my sister that her whole life. My sister's redheaded as well, which is Micah's wife. And okay. Yeah, I love her dearly, but I do tell her she has no soul because she's redheaded.
So we'll get back to the elk in a second, but let's talk about reptile. You said you think you can make it happen. What's your plan? Are you expecting him to disappear come that once he gets hardhorned? Are you expecting him to disappear and then hopefully make it back?
Yeah, I would expect him to do the same thing they usually do. However, he has been on camera a lot this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So he might stick around. And if he does, my whole idea that I talked about a few minutes ago with waiting is going to go right out the window. Because if he sticks around, I might be able to kill him before that. But I do expect him to leave. And really, say what you want about him, but trail cameras have kind of changed the game. Mm-hmm. We can use them in Missouri. I don't know about what you guys can do there, but, and I use information from them to help me decide what I'm going to do. So for instance, if it's October 10th and he hasn't shown back up at all on camera, I'm probably not going to go because all I'm doing is laying my scent down, making noise, and potentially turning him off from being back. So what I would try to do is I will wait until he gives me a single photo again, and then I'm going to use weather events. So let's say he gives me a photo on October 15th. I will say, okay, he's at least back in the area. Remember, I'm only on 15 acres. It's not like I'm where he's going to be all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I will take that information. And then let's say the next Tuesday or something like that, we get a 20 degree drop in weather or drop in temperature, and the barometer might shoot up to over 30 or something like that. I'm going to be in the stand within 24 hours of that, hopefully. And with that switch and stuff, my hope is he gets on his feet earlier and he makes it to where I'm at. Because I really don't think he's betting on me anymore at that point. I do think he's betting on me now, but I don't think by then he'll do it anymore. So I've got to get him on his feet before dark, basically, is what I'm trying to accomplish at that point.
It would be an evening hunt then.
Most of the time I've noticed him, but you know, if it's a 5 a.m. photo, then it might be a morning thing. It just depends.
Sure. And what's your access route like? Are you able to come in through the timber to get to where you want to set up?
I kind of have to. I don't want to, but I'm kind of lucky because the landowner lives on that property.
Mm-hmm.
So I drive up their driveway and park next to their garage, and the deer it's not like I'm right next to the timber, but the deer, that's not something they're not used to. So they drive in their driveway every damn day. So, and then I walk from there, and depending on where I'm going to hunt that day, I typically try to sneak along a field edge and then dip into the timber, where I've kind of beaten a path down over the last 4 years, essentially, to get into my stands. And the reason why I don't love hunting the morning there is I almost always bum deer out of there. So And there's really not a whole lot I can do about it. Mm-hmm. There's only one way I can access from. So at least initially. So that's why I prefer going in there in the afternoon, because I can get there really early when I know the deer probably aren't there right now.
So that makes sense. Yeah, it makes total sense. But so like if you wanted to hunt in the morning, there's really no way you can sneak back 50 yards into the timber to get to your stands, or you have to walk that field edge.
Yeah, well, and like the main stand that I'm talking about there, that's in the timber, I can do it, and mm-hmm. I have, but well, I tell you what, man, if you took 20 morning hunts in that timber stand that I try to go hit, I bet I bump deer before I get to the stand over 10 times, over half the time. And I hate doing that because I don't know who it was.
Right.
Like, was it a doe? Probably, but I don't know it because it's freaking dark, you know, and I do everything. Like, I walk as slow as I can. I don't have any lights on, which maybe I should. Maybe I should turn lights on and just, you know, beat feet to the stand. And I don't know. I don't like doing that, but maybe that's the right answer. Maybe they don't care, but you know, I'm trying to be quiet and it doesn't work. You know, they're going to know you're there. So, that's the one difficult thing with morning hunts is I don't know if they're there or not. And it would make sense for them to still be there because that's before they go back to bed. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want them there before they go back to bed. So it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't thing. Evening hunts there, I don't want them there when I show up. I want them coming out of bed. So I usually can get in there pretty easily. So, you know, I've made it work before, but it's more difficult in the mornings there.
Yeah, that makes sense. What kind of, I did not ask earlier, what kind of ag is it? Is it alfalfa, soy, corn? What is it right now?
So it's a rotation of corn and alfalfa and soybeans every year. Okay. This year it's soybeans.
Okay. That'll be.
Which I prefer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a great field.
We were actually going to plant some late beans this year along a field edge that timber field edge.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to plant some late beans within the last couple of weeks, and it never happened. And now we're getting ready to leave. So it's not going to happen, but that would have been real nice because then those beans could have come up and hopefully been green during the winter, but
yeah, that would have been really nice. Oh, well. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. You got next year.
Yep. Yep.
So is there any, so listening to your podcast and everything this year, are there any new tactics that you're going to try to use this year looking forward to deer season?
Yeah, I'm taking a kid hunting. So I don't know what the hell to think. I mean, like Micah and I spent an entire day last week or 2 weeks ago hanging three ladder stands so that I can take my son and hopefully get him his first deer. So that's going to change a lot because I think a lot of times when I decide to go hunting, I'm going to hopefully take him, and where I might go by myself is probably going to be a lot different than where I end up going, so that he can go and, you know, get himself a shot if he gets a chance to. So it's going to be weird. I'm really excited about it. It's just going to be different because I'm not only worrying about myself this year. I'm worrying about taking him and hopefully getting him to get one. So, and he's only 10. So, you know, I'm not going to like say, hey, go hunting tonight, Caden, by yourself. He's, you know, he's going to be with me most likely.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So,
no, I'm him and my other son have been going hunting with me before, but they've always just went with daddy. You know, like I'm hunting, they're with me. Now, his younger brother will still be in that situation, but Caden will actually get the opportunity if we're lucky enough to hopefully harvest something. So it's weird because now I got to think of like all these different things. Like, okay, I got to make sure, you know, I've got a hanger for his bow, and I've got to make sure, how am I going to set him in the tree? So if he gets a shot, he's going to get, you know, have a good, you know, do I need to sit him on this side or do I sit on that side? You know, cause I'm going to have my bow with me too. So it's going to be interesting to figure everything out, but I'm excited about it.
So here's the real question.
I'm shooting reptile if he walks out in front of both.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That was the question.
And I'll tell you what, I've gotten a lot of shit for it, but, and who knows, maybe I'll change my mind. Maybe I'll let him have the big deer on his first deer ever, but who knows? I really don't know. And if that does happen, I'm going to have an interesting situation on my hands, but I'll tell you this. I hope it happens.
Oh man, that would be something. And if that happens, I hope
I fancy my, I fancy myself a good father, but I'm not that good.
I don't know what I would do. I don't think I'd be that nice, but
you know what? It's weird because Andy had made a great point. Andy's one of my co-hosts and Andy's been hunting his whole life. And the first deer he ever killed was a big deer. And everybody says, you know, oh, you're ruined. You're never gonna, you know, and Andy's been deer hunting his whole life since then, right?
Mm-hmm.
He actually thinks it's better for a kid to start with a big deer because then they're hooked. Like it's forever.
Right.
I don't disagree with him on that. So part of me is like, well, maybe I should let him. And then the other part of me is like, yeah, but there's other bucks there that he would love. And you know, if something goes wrong, God forbid, right? If something goes wrong, it's not reptile that it went wrong on. Now, now I can mess up too. I'm 100%. I can mess up too. But, you know, so I've had all those thoughts going through my head. I really hope he's with me when, if that deer steps out, that'd be great, great to have happen. So we'll see.
That'd be awesome. But also an ethical dilemma or a parental dilemma.
Yes, it would. I honestly, I'm still in a decision mode on that because I have no idea what that would do.
I can't help you with that. I really can't. I'm not even a father yet. So.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. And so I have no idea. So I can't help anybody out there with the same problem. Sorry.
So you mentioned before the So you mentioned before the show, before we started recording, that you were testing out some new broadheads. What did you decide to go with this year?
All three of us, so we all used to shoot Slick Tricks.
Yep.
And have always liked them, but you know, kind of like one of those, hey, it's time for a change, you know, just something different. We all went to something different than the other guy. So that was kind of cool. Funny enough, so I went with Iron Wills.
Oh, nice.
Iron Will Solids. I sold my firstborn child and bought those. those are expensive. But I like them. They're pretty freaking sweet.
Solids with a bleeder blade or not?
Yeah. Solids with bleeders.
Double or single bevel?
Double.
Okay.
Which I'm kind of regretting now, but this show hasn't even come out yet, but we were recorded a show with Lusk Archery, who mm-hmm. was a broadhead tester. And we brought this up in the show and he basically said, you can't go wrong with any of the Iron Wills. But he also said he really liked their single bevel. So, whatever. I bought the regular solids, not the wide, just the regular solid. Andy switched over. He went back to Rages, which is a mechanical broadhead.
Okay.
And we brought that up in the show. by the end of the show, Andy was ordering a new broadhead for himself, and he hopes it's here by the time we leave next week. So,
which nothing range? Wrong with was it hypodermic or tripans? Tripans. Okay.
Yeah. And he actually ordered another mechanical, but John was a huge fan of a mechanical blade called, and I don't know anything about mechanicals. I've never shot them. So, but John Lusk was a huge fan of a mechanical blade called the Sever.
I've never heard
brand.
Of
it. Okay. And he was able to like shoot that brand through the steel plate 5 times as a mechanical blade, which
holy
is
crap.
Crazy. So he said, if you're going to have a mechanical, I really like those. So by the end of the show, Andy was literally ordering. So that was pretty cool. And then Micah went with a newer broadhead that probably not a lot of people even know about yet, but it's called a Thorn Crown. Mm-mm. Heard of that one yet?
Nope.
You need to Google that after we get done with
Thorn
this.
Crown. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, because you haven't seen a broadhead that looks like that before. It is a fixed blade broadhead.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just going to look at it and be like, holy crap, that's weird looking. I mean, it's gnarly looking. And it did pretty good on his testing. So a few things he didn't love about it, but it's a cool looking broadhead too. So we're all like moving away in different directions for different reasons. Like I went with the Iron Will because I hit an animal in a bone mm-hmm. and it didn't penetrate. And my brother-in-law has hit an elk in the shoulder before. And I'm not saying that Iron will go through the shoulder, but if a broadhead's going to go through bone, that's one of them because it's got some of the hardest steel that's used or mm-hmm. hardest materials that they use. So, I wanted it to go through things that it hits. And, I changed because of that. Andy changed because he wanted bigger holes up front. You know, he wanted to like see blood, you know, he mm-hmm. was tired of not seeing blood, and a rage will definitely punch a damn hole in something, especially the first hole. And then Micah just switched because he was in the same field and these thorn crowns basically drill a damn hole in the animal. And you'll see why when you Google that. And so that's what he did that for. So we all had kind of different reasons why we wanted to switch. And we'll see. I'm excited about my Iron Wills, but they were not cheap. So
no, they're not cheap. I've wanted to try them, but I haven't been able to do it. So
yeah.
What's your setup look like? So you got your Iron Will up front. Are you using their collar system at all? Their titanium, your stainless steel collars?
No, I didn't change my weight up front this year. So it's just the same. The solid head screws into my insert on my, okay. my arrows. And then just, it sits flush with the arrow. I'm shooting Black Eagle arrows, mm-hmm. Rampages, I believe.
Yep.
It's sitting right there. So I could probably look, but,
300 or 340? Eagle,
grains,
spine three or 300.
Oh, gosh, man. It's a 300 spine. I'm positive okay. of that now. Yeah. 300 spine.
What's your draw weight? Sorry, I'm interrupting you.
My draw weight is 70 pounds because okay. I'm a short bastard. So it has to be. Draw weight 70 because my draw length is just at 27.
Okay.
You're
not that short.
I am short. I'm not like a midget, but I'm only 5'7", 5'8". So I actually shoot a 11-year-old bow. I'm shooting a 2010 or 2011 Bowtech Assassin still. I love that bow and I shoot good with it. And I really just don't have the desire to learn something different or get, you know, used to another bow. So I still shoot a Bowtech Assassin. Just got it restrung this last year. My sight, I use a Black Gold Pro sight. Been a big fan of that sight so far.
So I had that on. Black Gold Pro, is that a slider too, a 3-pin slider?
The 3-pin slider, yeah.
Okay, yep.
Yep. And that was, I made mine, I think the reason it's technically a pro is because I custom ordered it.
Oh, okay.
You know, so like I got to pick the pin colors and what size and I did the dovetail or whatever the hell that's called.
Yep, the dovetail attachment.
Set up. So, and the reason I did ordered it custom is because red optics really starburst on me really badly.
Mm.
And so I wanted all three green pins or like a yellow and a green, but I went all three greens. And so I got to just basically make it myself. So I think it's really basically a pro because of that, but hell, I don't really know. And then let's see what else. My release. I honestly don't remember. I think it's called a True Ball Short and Sweeter.
Hey, I got the same one. I freaking love that release.
I was going to switch to a thumb release and I talked to my bow guy, who is a well-known archery guy, who doesn't like to get a lot of attention. So I won't say his name, but he just knows stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was using this just cheap ass trigger. I don't even know what it was at this point. And he told me to try out a few and I got that short and sweeter and I got short fingers cause I'm not a tall person. And I was shooting a trigger release that had the trigger came out straight perpendicular mm-hmm. at a 90 degree angle from your string, right? And I didn't even realize how much I was reaching before. But that short and sweeter, I got the sweatback trigger version.
Yep.
And oh my gosh, it is so nice. I can just rest my finger right on it and I can use that back tension and just almost it's so nice. And so I actually have two of them in case my first one breaks. I got a backup. And I'll probably keep shooting those as long as they make them. A lot of people are moving over to like thumb releases mm-hmm. and the other kind, I forget the name at the top off the top of my head, back tension release.
Yeah,
I
the guess. Tension release.
And they look they look cool, but I shoot good and I don't really feel like changing. So I'm still gonna shoot that trigger release until I'm made to switch.
Yep, I don't blame you. I love that thing.
Yeah, so that's my setup and I'm happy with it. I mean, I've been shooting the same setup now for probably close to 5 years, same arrows, that sort of stuff. So really happy with it.
Awesome. What would you say your effective range is going out to Colorado? What's your max?
Are we talking about an animal that has no idea I'm there?
Yeah, we'll say that.
Okay. Cause that definitely changes. Like if they're mm-hmm. alert to you, a 70 yard shot's a bad idea or whatever. Right.
Yep.
But if the animal was not alert to me, I would feel comfortable around 70 yards probably.
What do you practice out in the summertime?
Practice out to like 120. I mean, just random stuff. I've got my own little range here at my house.
Nice.
And so I can walk, hell, I can walk 200 yards back there if I wanted to. But so yeah, I'll shoot my field tips and my broadheads just random distances all the way out to like 80, 90 yards. I don't really love shooting my broadheads much further than that because you're shooting a little 16-inch broadhead target. And if you're a little off, you could lose everything.
And when you're shooting iron wells, you really don't want to remortgage the house.
Fucking $40 broadhead. I don't really want to lose it. Yeah. So, for instance, when I was sighting these broadheads in, my first shot was at 23 yards mm-hmm. and it was great. So I moved back to 48, which was just, you know, I walked to a distance, I turn around, range it, and that was what it was. So I shot my second one at 48. It was dead on. And then I moved back to 67 yards and it was dead on. And I said, well, this arrow is good. And then I did the same thing with the other two heads that I had. And I felt great. So I would say I would take a 70 yard shot if everything was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Elk wasn't aware I was there. I didn't have anything in the way and I had all the time in the world to prepare for the shot. If you're going to rush it, that's a real bad idea. If he or she is aware that you're there, they're going to be halfway to the next county by the time that arrow gets there mm-hmm. because they're already on, you know, antsy or something like that. Same thing with a whitetail. Like if they know you're there, they're going to drop so quick by the time that arrow gets there. I just think that's a bad idea. If they don't know you're there, then you can start thinking about, hey, I can reach out a little further if I need to, but.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's a real controversial question. Are you going to take a frontal shot if you get the opportunity?
On an elk?
On an elk. Let's say he's 40 yards.
40? No, probably not.
How about 20?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. That's fair. I don't know what I would do yet. I don't know.
Practice it here at home. Like, my brother-in-law Russell does this. He actually spray paints like an elk on a hay bale. Now you can't use a broadhead on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, just go and like watch, oh gosh, born and raised guys.
Yep.
And all the guys that take these frontal shots, they kind of explain where you want to hit, right? And if you feel good with a frontal shot and you feel like you can execute it, it's a deadly shot. If you do the right thing. Now, if you hit them in the wrong spot, that's why like at 40 yards, I'm not so sure, man, because they can move real fast, you know, like mm-hmm. just a quick turn. And at 20 yards, it's a lot closer. So it's a little less likely that you'll miss that target you're hitting. But at 40 yards, I mean, they can be damn near be broadside by the time that arrow gets there. And now you might be punching a shoulder or something. So yeah, I'll do it. I think I would at 20 yards.
That's fair. I mean, you got a little room, little margin of error at 20 yards with a frontal shot.
Now, yeah. I'm also saying I might be that dude after the fact that might be going, now what had happened was,
what had happened was,
I should not have taken that shot. So I have no idea.
Yeah. You're kicking yourself the rest of the time, but
yeah,
that's I'm sure you're way very confident at 20 yards and 40 and 50 if you're shooting out the 120 all summer.
I don't mean to be like this shouldn't hopefully doesn't come across cocky or not cocky. What's the word? Yeah. When I see an animal and I'm, you know, getting ready to shoot them, the nerves don't ever really hit me at that mm-hmm. time. It's almost always after I get this flush of stuff. Usually when I see them and I start going through everything I got to do. Okay. Grab your bow. Is he ranged? What's the range? Like I don't have time. It's like my brain doesn't give me time to start freaking out. So I feel like I can make a good shot most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't happen that way, but I didn't, it's not like I messed the shot up because I was all jacked up. You know, like some people talk about target panic and all that. Like I don't, knock on wood, that's not something I've messed with before.
Right.
I usually stay pretty calm during the shooting part. And then after that arrow flies, it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, then it all hits me. But, so like with a frontal or a longer shot, I feel like I could potentially do that just because I don't really get all freaked out during that process.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can agree with that. Like my, I'm a little weird though. If I have something coming in that I'm not going to pull on, like I'll sit there and like, if like last year, several times I had does walk right underneath me and I'm just sitting there jackhammering. I'm like, this is so cool.
Yep.
But then a buck comes in and I'm just sitting there watching, just waiting. Yeah. And I don't know what it is. But then afterward, like after I shot my buck last year, I was like, I could barely touch my phone.
And like, I don't, this people are going to make fun of me for this, but multiple times after I've killed a buck in my life, I'm crying right after it. And it's not because like, I'm so happy. Like, I can't believe this. It's like, there's so much emotion running through my body that all of a sudden my eyes are watering. And I'm like, what the hell's going, like it goes from 0 to 150 real fast, but it's afterwards. Thank God.
Yeah.
You know, cause if that was hitting me during the shooting, I could see what people are talking about. That would suck. I don't know why I don't do that. It's just, I'm lucky in that aspect, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great quality to have. Cause yeah, that would really suck if you're sitting there trying to take a 40 yard shot and you're all over from ass to nose, trying to get your pin on him. God.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm completely calm mm-hmm. and like, you know, a serial killer. I mean, I'm jacked up a little bit, but
start calling you Dexter.
Yeah. It's not like I blank out. Like some people say they black out and then all of a sudden the arrow is flying. You know, I start going through my jobs, like all the different things I need to do. I start going through them. And so, you know, like I don't really have time to freak out because I'm thinking.
Sure. Yeah. That's great to have, but who knows? Maybe you get an elk screaming in your face at 40 yards. You'll be like, oh crap.
Yeah. We'll get on another show. I'll be like, hey, so guess what, dude? I'm a liar.
I totally jinxed myself.
Yeah. That's the, I'm a little hesitant to even talk about that because I really don't want to jinx myself.
All right. New topic. So
new topic. Yeah.
Going up to Colorado this year, this will be your fifth year. You got 4 years under your belt. What are some things you've learned in the last couple of years that you're going to try to implement in this coming year? Or what are some things you're going to do different than years prior?
That's a great question, man. I think this year, one of the big things we're going to do is, so the last 2 years, we have just kept hunting pressure has been so much more different than the first 3 years I went. And so I'm not going to let other hunters frazzle me. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like last year I was out of my game from day one. Like it was holy shit. There's dudes camping in the middle of the freaking mountain. These elk are supposed to be in now. Like, where am I going to, hopefully the idea this year is to use the hunters to my advantage. Like if they're there, the elk aren't. So I'm going to go find the elk. And last year, I think it was like, I was upset because that's where they're supposed to be. Now what? So I'm going to use, like, I'm just going to roll with the punches this year if it's the same thing. And what else? There will be no bugling from me if there's a lot of pressure. First off, remember, I'm going on season start September 2nd. Mm-hmm. In Colorado, they're really not rutting yet. And so you might hear a bugle the entire time we're there, but they're so pressured and they're not rutting yet that if I bugle, I'm just going to have 50 hunters flood towards me. It's probably, if it sounds good, I hope it does. So, you know, I'll have the bugle tube with me, but most likely won't use it unless I get in some crazy situation. And, I am going to personally try to be a lot more patient than I normally am. Like if I get to the bottom of a mountain in a morning and I know that my goal is to get to the top by the time the wind switches, I don't know why, but it's like I'm in a sprint race and I'm just right up the mountain. And I need to do a little better job of slowing down and, you know, using a spot and then getting to the next spot and setting up and doing what I want and make it to the top or wherever I want to be in a slower fashion so that I'm hunting more quality time, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just getting to the next spot, like, oh, I got to get here. Well, I'm going to hunt there, you know, a little better instead of just like going.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like keep your eyes open and try not to blow past everything in between.
Yeah. Like instead of saying, hey, we got to get to the top of the mountain. And if we walk by something, it's not like I'm like running and being loud, but I'm just going to go slow, slow hunt, you know, maybe act like a cow, try to do some cow calling and then set up and wait for half an hour. See if he comes in quietly. And if not, then I'll do the same thing again and I'll make it to where I need to. And instead I'll just kind of do it a little slower.
Sure.
Hopefully.
Just out of curiosity, how many guys are you going with that have tags?
Five.
Five? And all five of you have tags?
Yeah, there's six of us going, five will have tags.
Okay. So how do you guys set up a base camp then and then kind of go out from there and meet up at night?
Yeah, we set up a base camp and then usually go off in pairs.
Okay.
Now, we won't have pairs because we'll have an odd man out. So he'll either be by himself or he might hook into one of the groups of two. Typically, though, and it'll probably be like this again, we are in pairs, but then when we get up into an area, a lot of times we'll split off from each other and we'll put a waypoint on the map and we'll say, hey, we'll try to meet back up here sometime after the wind switched, you know, around lunch, and we'll get together then. Just so we're not as loud, you know, two people is louder than one.
Right.
And, you know, if you've ever watched like the Born and Raised stuff, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times the caller will stay back and the hunter will go forward and get the elk before it gets to the caller. That's a great idea, but they're not bugling. We can't do that the way we're hunting right now. So having two guys is just twice as loud is really all it is.
Right.
So we do stay together some, but we'll also split off so that we can kind of cover a little more. And hopefully, you know, if we are on a bench, maybe one of us is on the top side of it, the other one's on the bottom side of it. And, you know, if there's anything in that bench, we hopefully we'll stumble by it or get it to come into a quiet call sequence or something like that.
So you guys are doing some like cow calling?
Yeah. So I don't remember who I listened to, but he's really successful at hunting silent elk. And one of the things, I wish I could give him credit. It was a podcast I listened to.
Is it Joel Turner by chance?
I couldn't even tell you if you said the right name at the moment.
All right.
But he's real successful at hunting silent elk. And he kind of does a lot of that. Like he'll walk, let's say 50 yards, and he'll act like a group of cows and calves together. And then he'll set up, and he'll try to set up to where if a silent bull were to come in, he would set up downwind of that. And the bull might, you know, come in and check wind first as he's coming in to check out that group of cows, and he's killing it. So my idea is to kind of, if I'm going to be walking at all, I might make those calls so that they think I'm an elk and they'll come check it out if they're anywhere within earshot of hearing that, those few calls. So mm-hmm. I'll do like a cow call here or there. I'll do a calf. And if I've got my brother-in-law with me, he'll do the same thing. And we'll just sound like a small group, and then we'll split off, set up, sit down for half an hour, however long. And if he comes in, he's going to get it. And if he doesn't, we do the same. We get up and move on to the next spot and do the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I know Joel Turner has done, he does a lot of the stuff with the Elk Shape guys, and he's pretty big with Shot IQ. And he talks a lot about, he doesn't bugle when he goes out. He pretty much just cow and calf calls is his biggest thing.
It's very possible that's who I listen to, but
yeah, but the tactic does sound a slightly different than what he talks about. But anyway, so you're going out Colorado cow or elk hunting. What's some new gear that you have aside from your Ironwheel broadheads that you're bringing with you this year that you're excited about?
Awesome. New gear here. Well, okay. I've got a one person tent. I've got a mummy sleeping bag. I've got a jet boil, a Sawyer squeeze. And the reason I have those items is there's a decent chance that we're going to stay out on the mountain overnight and try to get a little further, or at least be ahead of other people the next morning.
Right.
Where we're going, there's no 7 miles deep stuff. Like you hear people talk about, that's not where we're at. There's so many trails all over the place that everywhere is within 2 or 3 miles of some trail. So, but we can be ahead of others. So I got that stuff because we might actually do an overnight type of setup where we're not back at base camp. So got that stuff. I bought trekking poles. I'm cautiously optimistic about those, but I don't know. People say they're awesome. And so I bought some. So we'll see how that goes. If I use them at all, I don't know. Everyone's like, you got to have trekking poles, dude. And I'm like, why? I don't understand the whole deal with them. But you know, if I've got meat on my back, I think they'd be great, but
right.
I'm not going to have them out while I'm hunting.
No, so, absolutely not.
I don't quite get them, but hey, maybe I'm wrong on that.
I have some, but they came with a trekking pole tent that I bought that I'm not going to use because they got a better deal on a different tent. That's a better tent. So now I have like 4 tents, but I'm only using one. So
they were $25. So I was like, hey,
yeah, you're not out much. Yeah.
So and I actually got some, what else did I get? Oh, I told you my brother-in-law drew New Mexico.
Oh yeah.
So we both bought Garmin InReach minis this year.
Oh, sweet.
So that we can communicate so that if something happens to them or they get something down and need some help down in New Mexico, because we won't be too far from New Mexico where we're hunting, you know, we can potentially get to them in half a day or vice versa. And so that way we can actually communicate because where we're going, there's no cell service for a while and they don't know because they've never been to where they're going. So we bought those and we got those set up actually the other night. Seems pretty cool. You just go into the app on the Garmin app and send your message and it's supposed to show up on the other person's phone with their mini. So
nice.
Pretty little cool deal. They're tiny too. I mean, like literally 3 inches long, maybe. Like
sure.
It's pretty cool.
Do you have maps on them at all? I can't remember if those do or not. So I think regular InReaches do.
I think they do. And I got on the app had maps, but they were just like your regular street view maps, like just the green. I didn't see where there was a satellite option. So I'm still using my Onyx. And actually, I have Onyx and base map. because I'm neurotic and it, like, I'm like, what if one goes bad? Like, you know, the map's messed up or something while I'm out there. So I actually have both. Face map's so cheap, man. Face map's $30 for an entire year, maybe even 20.
That's
right. And you get every state. So I'm like, and I really like base map. I also like things about Onyx too. So it's like, I'll just get them both.
Yeah, it's kind of a no brainer, I guess.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I mean, I guess it was $30 I didn't have to spend, but we had, it was 2 or 3 years ago, one of the guys actually, their offline maps failed. And so he was sitting on the mountain and he didn't have his maps were all blurred out. Like they were just, so he actually had to stick with somebody because he didn't know where he was. He had to wait until he was back into town and got service and he was able to re-download the maps and something went wrong with the, I don't think the app was updated or something.
Shit.
And so ever since then, I've been a little like paranoid about that happening. So like make sure folks, before you go into the wilderness, download your maps and then make sure you go offline before you go to make sure everything is good. But even then, sometimes stuff can go wrong because it is technology. So I have them both. That way, if something goes wrong, I got both.
That's a good idea. I didn't even think about that. I'm also going, we're going to see how this goes, but I'm bringing, at this point, I've only got 2 battery packs. My battery life on my phone sucks. I'm probably going to buy a 3rd, possibly a 4th battery pack.
That's not the worst idea because that would really suck to just like die.
Yeah.
You know, out in the middle and you're like, oh crap. But
yeah, my phone, like I said, it's an iPhone 7. It's been through the ringer. The battery's not great, but I had to buy so much other crap that I was like, I can't upgrade this right now. So I was like, well, I'll just buy more battery packs naturally.
Good thing is your battery life should get a little better when you put it into airplane mode.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, mine will die probably by the end of the day too. And so, but airplane mode definitely helps for sure. Oh,
it definitely does. But I don't know how much I'll be using Onyx actually.
Guess we'll find out. If you're anything like me, you're looking at it every 30 seconds.
Yeah, well, I don't know
freaking why.
That's how I am here too. Like, oh,
yeah, it's not like you're.
I went 50 yards. What changed?
Nothing. But yeah, you're still nothing. Looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me too. Like, I don't know why I'm doing that. It's not like I'm going to walk off a cliff if I don't look at my Onyx. I could use my eyeballs, right? But it's just almost like second nature. Like every time you stop, you grab the phone and you look at your map.
So, yeah. I don't know if it's just because I don't have social media and I'm not like, it's not like I check social media that much anyway, but I'm always doing something on my phone. Usually it's Googling something absolutely completely idiotic, but
yeah.
I don't know, but we'll see, I guess. I'm looking forward to it. Sounds like you're looking forward to it. I hope you guys get something down this year.
Oh, same. I'll tell you what, we have a, I don't know what you call it, a mini series. It's not a mini series because it comes out the same time as our normal show, but we have a part of our podcast called Tales of the Chase. And it is strictly stories from people's hunts. So if you kill an elk, you got to promise to come on and talk about it.
All right. I'm probably not going to.
If I kill an elk, I'll do the same for you.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell the whole world if I kill an elk. Oh, that'd be great.
I hope you do, man. I'd love to hear that story. But yeah, I mean, being my first year, I'm really not expecting to come away with an elk. I'm just expecting to have an experience and then figure out what I did wrong, everything I did wrong, or at least 2 things I did wrong.
I think you're looking at it the right way. I would tell you that go into your first year just excited to be there, you know, just learn as much as you can. Just have fun. You know, I mean, you got to remember you and I are going to hunt over the counter archery in the beginning of September. So I'm assuming where you're going, they're also not rutting yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in an over the counter archery unit that is already horrid odds. So the statistical odds of anybody, and honestly, killing are very slim. So if you go into it not expecting to kill something, expecting to learn, have fun, and honestly, I would consider it a successful year if you just see an elk. You know, just like within 100 yards of you, if you can see an elk within 100 yards of you, I would be ecstatic. I want to kill one now, sure, but I didn't see an elk last year. Mm-hmm. I just want to see one now. Like, I just want to see one again, and then I want it to die in that order. So,
yeah, I mean, I told the guy I'm going with, I was like, I don't like success this time is defined as one, coming back alive, two, like just learning something, whether it's how elk use wallows, how elk use the terrain, how elk use that area, how the hunting pressure is in that area. I don't know what it's going to be. And then three, it'll be an ultimate success if we even see an elk from like 500 yards away.
Yeah.
That'll be it. But.
And then you can use the genius words of my brother-in-law, Russell, who is, he's the only one that's killed a bull elk in the 5 years I've been going. So I consider him the best elk hunter out of our group. And he's a man of very few words. So I'm like, hey, Russ, what do I do? Like, how do I do this? He said, it's easy. See elk, kill elk, eat elk. Oh, that's all I have to do. Okay.
That's all I have to do. I appreciate that tip.
So do what Russell says. See the elk, kill the elk, eat the elk. All right. And you'll be good to go.
That seems like some very solid advice. And I hope I can follow that.
If you really think about it, it's a solid bit of advice. It's just not as easy as it is.
It's very practical. Now, we'll see how it goes.
Right.
All right. So other than Russell's words of wisdom, wrapping up here, any last words of advice or encouragement going into this season for anybody listening?
Every year, everybody starts gearing up and like freaking out and stuff. And, you know, I do it too. Have fun. Like, that's what hunting's supposed to be. Have fun. Be happy with what you do. Don't worry about what other people think about what it is you did. Just have fun and enjoy what you're doing, right? Every year people start pressing because, like, it's too, you know, like they haven't killed that deer yet or whatever. Don't press. Like, just remember what it's supposed to be about. I understand you want to kill it, but remember what it's supposed to be about. And then I'm tired of, I think my listeners understand that I'm not the biggest fan of social media. It has its place, but I hate when people judge others based on what they decided to kill, mm-hmm. you know, because they think they're some God or whatever. So, be happy. Try this, try to be happy for other people when they've killed something. As long as they did it legally. If somebody went and poached something, yeah, you know, hang them. But don't, you know, why do you got to judge somebody because they shot a 2.5-year-old buck on a piece of public ground? Who are you? Like, what made you God to say what that person could do with their tag? So have fun and be happy for others. And, you know, that would be a great year, I think, for everybody.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think that's a great note to end on. Don't be an asshole.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah, if we could just start teaching that in preschool, fuck, the world would be a lot better.
Thing is, I think we try to, and then we grow up and become dickheads. So
yeah, probably because we're dealing with other dickheads.
There you go. That's right.
Well, Nate, I appreciate you taking the time to come on. It's a good time.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Yeah, best of luck to you coming up.
Appreciate it.
And that is a wrap, folks. I hope you all enjoyed it. Head on over and check out those guys from the Missouri Woods and Water podcast at their social media at Missouri Woods and Water. They've got a lot of great content and they're pretty fun to follow along with. While you're at it, I'd really appreciate it if you give me a follow at South Dakota Unlimited on Facebook and Instagram. And once again, as the season starts up, good luck to everyone who's getting out in the next week or so. And I hope you are successful and send me your pictures.